It's the same old story. It's been a long day at the job, or maybe it's just starting to feel long, and you feel that urge to stretch your legs and get a little bit of a break. You walk down the street, or maybe you get behind the wheel of your car, and you feel the weight begin to lift. You walk through the doors, and the sound of the place starts to clear the air. You get a table, you order your drink, you listen to the sounds of the bar, and soak in the conversation. Welcome to the TNE Speakeasy, with your hosts, Eric, Isaac, and Caleb. Listen in as they discuss the 2010 film, Monsters. Well, here we are returning again for our third entry this year. I'm so surprised that we managed to fit in three of them up to this point. Of our surprise, somewhat unofficial retrospective on the films of Gareth Edwards. Because we did Rogue One, I don't know, what was it, like 3-4 months ago now? And then, just out of luck, I wasn't anticipating being able to do this yet, especially following up on the creator. We happened to get Godzilla 2014 on the randomizer. So we figured just to round it out, just to cover all of his films, we'd do this film first, Monsters, 2010. And I'm assuming for both you guys that you hadn't really seen this one, maybe you hadn't heard too much about it.
Literally heard nothing about it. You may have mentioned the title in passing one time when we were talking about Gareth Edwards, but it did not stick in my brain. And so, other than that, never knew this existed.
So, this one, I was aware of, only in that, but only in the movie's name. I didn't know anything about it being connected to Gareth Edwards, got that right this time, because, funny enough, this was produced, or at least is under the house name of Magnet Films. And I'm familiar with Magnet Films because they made, I think, either two or three films. I can't remember if the last one was made under that house or not. It's three of Gareth Evans' films, Maranthau, and both Raid duologies. So I believe either in Maranthau or the Raid Redemption, or the first Raid, there was a trailer. They pretty much, you know, put out trailers for all their other produced movies, and I think this is one of them. I think this was one of them that was in the trailer. So I knew about this film, but I didn't know the fact that it was, pardon me for repeating myself, that it was tied to Gareth Edwards. So I should have known that beforehand. Later on, I think Caleb informed me of his film Monsters. So I was like, okay, I'll add that to the list at some point.
Yeah, and for me, following up on what was seemingly a big sci-fi boom back in 2009, I was just paying more attention to indie sci-fi stuff, following films like Moon and District 9. And so when I saw this film coming out, making the rounds, I was like, ooh, maybe there's going to be like a monster boom too. Like if this can fall into that sci-fi wave, maybe we can get some more really cool monster stuff coming along. I didn't get to see it in the theater. I had to wait till it came out on Blu-ray, so I don't know if that was 2011 or late 2010, and I was so hyped for it. And when I finally saw it, I was kind of like, oh, okay, it was cool, but it definitely did not feel like the rejuvenation for the monster films that I was kind of hoping it would be. But I watched it a couple more times around then, and more especially, I watched the making of on the Blu-ray here, which is like an hour and 10-minute long little special. And watching that special, learning how low budget this was and how much Gareth Edwards was wearing just so many hats on this. I mean, he was the cameraman, director, cinematographer, screenwriter, sound man, and did all the special effects for it. I was kind of like, wow, this guy, he's got something here. And he was so enthusiastic and seemed to have such a love for filmmaking in the little bonus special that I was like, okay, I'm a fan of this guy. Whatever he does next, I'm going to be there. And it turned out that next film was Godzilla 2014, and I was over the moon excited. I couldn't be more hyped for a movie. And yeah, we'll discuss how that ended up turning out. Even though I don't think this is a great film, it was kind of nostalgic going back to it and watching that making of again as well. I enjoyed that maybe even more than watching the movie again. So that's my history with it.
let's start things off. Eric, if you could, please give us just a brief synopsis of what this the plot of this film.
Oh, great. So, because of a NASA probe, this thing had crashed into Mexico, which then brought with it, I guess, multiple different alien species. And there's now much of northern Mexico is basically quarantined as a infected zone. So it kind of creates this natural barrier between the rest of Mexico and Central South America and the United States. And these two Americans are in the southern Mexico side of things. And the male character, Andrew Calder, is tasked to take his boss's daughter, escort her back to the United States. And the easiest way would be to catch a ferry that could go through the Gulf and skip across. But because of reasons, they can't go that way, and they actually have to travel through the extremely dangerous infected zone to get where they're going. And I think that's basically it.
Thank you very much, sir. Now, if I may ask, what is your best thing and worst thing about this film?
Oh, crap. I had something in mind for best thing. I don't know if this was what I was originally thinking earlier today, but for now, I'm going to say the best thing about the movie for me is just how much he or they, Gareth Edwards, was able to pull off a movie that looks like a movie, but on the smallest budget possible and crew, etc. Because I could tell just from watching it, yeah, this is obviously a smaller budget film, but I had no idea what we were really talking about until I read up on the movie after I watched it. So off the top of my head, that's the best thing. The worst thing is that while there's good performances and overall good story or plot, and there's good character arcs over the course of the movie, that being said, there are too many in-between parts where the scenes either drag too long, or the reason they feel like they drag is because while the characters are doing things, or whether they're interacting with each other or whatever, a lot of it feels like padding for time, because a lot of it is not really moving anything in any direction. I mean, like arc-wise, it just feels like, oh, we just, like, I don't know what the runtime on this movie is, but let's just say there's like 60 minutes of movie and like 60 minutes of in between spaces that you don't usually see in a movie unless you watch like a random extended cut where they just like throw in all the unnecessary parts. So there's a lot of it that just feels like unnecessary parts because it's not moving along the characters or anything in any significant way. And then also, for a large part of the movie, especially like perhaps the first half or so, the male character just feels a little bit too aloof and inept for the situation at hand. And that is very annoying. So, yeah.
Would you say that you would give this a feeling it or not feeling it?
I'm feeling it, but I wanted to feel it more.
Fair enough.
And I also watched two or three other people's reactions or like review, mini reviews. And so I watched three, and one liked it immensely more than me, and the other two liked it much less than me. But the things that they brought up, whether they liked it or disliked it, I was like, yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Well, thank you for that, sir. On to you, Caleb. Your best thing and your worst thing about this film?
Yeah, best thing. That's a little hard for this. If I had to narrow down the thing that I enjoy about the movie the most, it's probably the element of it feeling like a travelogue where we're going to all these different places, and the camera work, I think they get a lot of really good coverage of all the beautiful locations, especially once they're into the more kind of woodsy area, the jungly area. My worst thing is the consistent element that seems to hold back every single Gareth Edwards production, and that's just, yeah, characters that I don't feel almost any connection to. For this one, I can give him some breaks because they shot this just run and gun. They're basically just traveling around, and they'd see a location. They'd be like, okay, let's just, you two, you know, I trust you guys as improvisers. Just do what you can to fill out this scene so we can just capture this beautiful location. And so in that way, I can give it a break for feeling more poor, but it just makes the movie a bit dull. And like Eric mentioned, there's a lot of scenes that feel just padded. And yeah, it makes it a little bit more difficult to go back on repeat viewings. But yeah, that's basically what I got.
Would you say you're feeling it or not feeling it with this film?
I would say, especially having watched the documentary again, I'm feeling it just because you can always feel the creative spirit behind it and these people trying to live above their means. And I think that translates well. But overall, yeah, very, very light feeling it is what I'd give it. But how about you, Isaac? Best thing, worst thing?
Thank you, sir. My best thing. I love how this is an indie film. This does have that feel of magnet films. I like those films. I like them a lot. They're very, like, they're like a different breed of A24 Blumhouse. They're very, like, down to earth. They're very mid budget. In fact, they're probably like above indie, or they're like indie level, maybe above that slightly. But I love the feel of it. I like how down to earth they can be. And this really felt, in comparison to Gareth Edwards' other films, and I gotta, you know, maybe not compare this to his other films, but I definitely like how maybe human this felt, even though, again, what you guys are saying is probably true with these characters, but I like the characters. Definitely, again, I guess, yeah, maybe they're probably bad for me to again say this, but I liked how they had a lot more personality to them, and their interactions seemed a little bit more natural, and like there was something going on between the two of them. I did like that. I could see both your criticisms there, but I guess just in comparison to Edward's other pieces, wow, I definitely enjoy this world that he's in. And again, I want him to go back to this. I love the camera work in this and how, again, real it looks. It doesn't look cinematic, but again, has that like street level view to it. I enjoy, like, you know, them just being like boots on the ground, and we, you know, immerse ourselves in this culture. I definitely, you know, similar to The Creator, I enjoyed that. Worst thing. Good question. What is my worst thing with this? I always have a problem with coming up with the worst thing. I'll have to postpone that because I can't think of anything off the top of my head. I'm not saying this is a perfect film. Don't worry, it's not a perfect film. But I can't think of anything as of this moment. But I will give this a feel in it. I definitely enjoyed it, and I will go back to it at some point. Although, well, maybe this isn't for the movie, but worst thing is that this was not on the Microsoft Store, and I had to go to Amazon Prime for this. So that is definitely a not feeling it.
Oh, wow. But,
or at least, yeah, definitely, yeah, not feeling that. So, but either way, yeah, I'm definitely giving this a feeling it. I enjoyed this. Not strong or, you know, light or anything like that. But just, yeah, this is a good feeling movie, and let's get on with the discussion. So, Caleb, where would you like to start with this discussion?
Well, the first thing I wanted to say was I'm glad you brought up The Creator, because especially, you know, that was kind of his returning to more of like a mid-budget production and wanting to be a little bit more down-to-earth. I can actually feel a lot of similarities in terms of how his worldview comes out in both of these. Like, there's an element with the aliens that it's kind of like, you know, the U.S., they keep putting up this effort to try to contain it, to control it, but it's here now and it's inevitable, and you can either try to live with it or you can kind of pointlessly push against it. And that was basically the whole message in The Creator. And yeah, like that movie also had that element to the travelogue. So I wonder if he was reaching back to this to try to find his creative spirit again after it being so crushed with those Hollywood productions.
Yeah, like when we went through our little early George Lucas retrospective, And once we watched the three films, or even the fourth, if you count that, how when we finally got to Star Wars 77, how I could, even though they're pretty different, the different entries by Lucas, I could still see like connective tissue binding them all to some extent. Now, having seen this and already having seen Gareth Edwards' other works to date, I have the same type of experience where, even though there's a lot of differences to point out in his movies, I can still see connective tissue throughout all of them to some degree.
Yeah, and I also liked liken the creator. They have the kids watching a cartoon, and that's a little animated version of what's going on. Did you like that touch, Isaac? I know we both liked that in the creator.
I definitely enjoyed that part where I was like, ah, oh, he brought that back. Or, well, he started here and he brought it back in the creator. So, yeah, you're right. I did enjoy that.
That's funny. I just saw that on screen like 60 seconds ago.
Yeah, that's just cute. And it makes the world feel more fleshed out, too. Even the kids are sitting there watching cartoons about the aliens.
Yeah, and that's another thing I can appreciate about the movie in general is that I can always tell in other movies or television series that whenever they go to a Central South American setting, I can always tell if it's like Hollywood actors cast in the roles, regardless of where they shoot the actual thing. But in this, I could tell, no. These are obviously real people from the area, and I could tell that. And it's also apparent in many, if not most, of the locations that they're not like somewhere in Southern California or the Philippines or something shooting this. It's very apparent. So that's always something I can notice and appreciate.
Yeah, that's one of the joys of watching the making of, because they'd be like, oh yeah, we'd show up at this location. People would know that we were filming, but once they got a grasp of it, some people would just show up and be like, okay, I'll come and improvise with you guys. I'll play out this scene for you. So it really was just finding people around where they're shooting. And a lot of that is really fun. They also mentioned, too, when they were in Guatemala, that they didn't tell anyone that they're coming. They just started shooting. But once the police realized that, oh, these people are filming here, just like, oh, we'll just send an armed escort with you guys wherever you go. Just call us in the morning.
Right.
That's pretty fun, too.
Yeah, that makes sense. And the other thing I can notice compared to other productions is whenever they're speaking Spanish in movies and when it's supposed to be set in whatever location, this came up when Sean and I were reviewing the movie Traffic. And I was like, yeah, I get all these actors speaking Spanish lines speak Spanish. Like, you know, they don't sound like they're just mimicking a language. They're obviously fluent in their real lives. But at the same time, I could notice all the different accents, like what countries the actors came from. And so I was like, it's so confusing to just hear all these random accents and they're all supposed to be like Mexicans. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? Like if it was a movie set in America, but for some reason someone had a Canadian accent, someone had an Australian accent, someone had a UK accent, Irish, you'd just be like, what is happening? And that's another thing I always notice in Spanish-speaking Hollywood movies, which obviously does not happen in this movie. And so, yeah, I like that too.
Yeah, Isaac, anything to say there?
Nothing off the top of my head. Sorry, I'm getting distracted watching the movie again.
And we're done.
No, of course not. No, yeah, the authenticity of this and... I say realistic, but definitely like going in there and actually being with the locals. That's something I really enjoy. I enjoyed that with like the Raid films and Maranthau, where you're with the population. This is not a stupid Hollywood film where they're fake. I know like Fast and Furious is notorious for this as well.
Oh, yes.
So this is a breath of fresh air because this is 2010. So previous year would have been Fast 5, I believe. So this is off. This is the real deal. These are all like, you know, real people, real locals from, you know, the areas. I definitely enjoy that, and I just I like, as you know, you said with how These people adapt. They just, or at least how they're portrayed as well. They just see these aliens or these not of this earth creatures as just as a matter of fact. They just deal like, there's no way. We can do nothing other than just, continue to exist and go about our daily lives. We can't just live in fear of this for the entire time. I enjoy that kind of stuff. I won't go into this yet, but definitely this was giving me some District 9 vibes as well. Different, of course. We're not going into the whole, social awareness and any of those social issues that deals with in District 9, but it is, I don't know whether Edwards was, influenced by Blomkamp just, a year prior. Probably not. It's just a coincidence. He's just like,
I don't think directly, but it had to be on top of his mind, I would think.
Well, this was filmed in 2008.
In that case, it was...
Never mind.
A work of time travel telepathy.
Yep.
Yeah, I think it was just, the creative spirit, the technology was finally there. And so a lot of people... we're getting a chance to create these kind of bigger visions off of very little. And that's one of the interesting things too about watching Gareth Edwards as he was discussing making this is right from the front. He was like, I look at big blockbusters, big sci-fi movies, and that's what I want to make. And he was just doing the best he could. And so it worked out for him that he immediately jumped into that, but it's too bad, at least in my opinion, that so many of them haven't really been that great.
Yeah, I definitely got the District 9 vibes, even though it is different and its own thing. But it definitely seemed to come from that same vein in terms of small budget, work with what we got, and then also make something look much more expensive than its actual budget. Got all those vibes. But the whole time a lingering thought watching this movie was, yes, this is very much in the spirit of District 9. It's just not as impressive in multiple ways.
Yeah.
So I feel like a lesser District 9, even though I know it's a unique story compared to that. Another thing I can't help but think about since we've started talking about this movie is that in a couple ways it reminds me of the trajectory of early Linklater's career. And of course, me and Caleb have discussed previously his first movie, Slacker, but then also his sort of quasi-student film that he made before that. And for those, probably most people have never seen the student film, but if you did watch it and if you're familiar with Linklater's works, even though it's got an even smaller budget than this movie, Linklater's, and even though it's not nearly as refined as his later things, for me as a Linklater fan, I can go, oh yeah, but I see it. I see what the seed is that will blossom into like a more competent filmmaker later. It's not exactly a nuts to nuts comparison because Gareth Edwards' first effort is definitely more polished out the gate. But also, when you guys were talking about just kind of like shooting on location, guerrilla style, and just casting people who largely aren't known actors, that's what got me thinking about Slacker as well, since that movie is very much like that as well in terms of just using what's available on site, like in the Austin area of that time when the movie was made. So, yeah. Anyway, yeah.
Yeah, and I think one of the smart choices that he made as a director, and Isaac kind of mentioned this earlier, is he really wanted to make sure that he could get two leads that already had in-baked chemistry. So he wanted to cast a couple, which he did with these two. And I think that's just a, even though he's such an inexperienced filmmaker, that's just an immediately smart choice for people who have to do a lot of improv and you don't really see a ton of their relationship developing. I mean, it kind of happens, but you can feel a connection to them right from the start, I think.
Yes, but I wish there was a little bit more connection that developed in the movie.
Yes.
And I didn't discover what you just said until after I watched it. And when I discovered that fact, I was actually quite surprised, because you're right, it is a good strategy going in, but it didn't translate to the screen for me. That's why I was so shocked, because once I knew that, I was like, that's weird, because I didn't really see that chemistry in the actual movie. Obviously, I recognize the actor's face from other things.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But she, I was like, did they just, like, slacker again? Did they just pick, like, a random person around or someone new? Because she, even though, like, again, his character seems poorly developed and performed in the first half of the movie. I mean, that's just the way it was scripted, or not the actor's fault. But he just seemed like a much more seasoned actor, and she just seemed like a forgettable person you'll never see again. And so that also made their dynamic awkward for me.
No, that's, yeah, she definitely has an element of being a little bit of a charisma vacuum. Not to be too harsh, because, yeah, she was an inexperienced actress.
Yeah, but you're right. I mean, I know what you're saying.
Yeah, versus, yeah, Scoot McNeary, I think it is.
Yes.
Yeah, I've seen this guy a lot, and funnily enough, even 2 days before I watched this, I was trying to rewatch Batman v Superman, and he shows up in a semi-prominent part in that. So I was like, oh, there he is, so much younger, just 2 days later.
Yeah. If I remember correctly, I didn't double check, but there was this show that almost no one watched except for me and Carl on AMC, maybe, a number of years ago. It was called Halt and Catch Fire, which was where I first noticed the blonde who got on a little movie streak. She was the blonde in, I think she was like the streetwalker in Blade Runner 2049. Anyway, this same show, Halt and Catch Fire, is like the first time I noticed her before she had a little blow up on the Hollywood scene. And I want to say he was one of the main characters, along with the bad guy from Guardians of the Galaxy, actor, the original Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, the Ronin guy?
Yes, the actor, Lee Pace.
Okay.
So I believe it was Lee Pace and this guy and the girl from Blade Runner were like the leads in this very interesting series. Hmm. I'm pretty sure it was him, and he was really good in the role. He played like a sort of like the series takes place in the 1980s, and he plays like a fictional version, a little bit like a Steve Jobs or what's his name at Microsoft?
Bill Gates.
Bill Gates. He plays a little bit of like a mixture of Bill Gates, Steve Jobs type character, and he does it really, really well.
Oh, how cool.
Yeah, it's a really interesting series for people who are into a fictional drama set in the 80s that kind of shows life, like trying to create like a software hardware company in your garage.
Oh, but speaking of, I guess, making a company out of your garage, how do you feel like the effects worked in this with Gareth Edwards? Because he started out as an effects guy, and he just was developing that, and then once he realized, like, oh, you know, I could make a big blockbuster just with computers, that was kind of his impetus to push forward with this.
So, okay, just taking the movie as is before I read up on things like production, etc., just taking the movie for face value, I thought it was plenty good enough for what we were going for. Low budget, sci-fi-ish film, especially 2010. I thought it was good enough. Again, somehow District 9 looks dazzling in the effects department for 2009, especially because so many really big budget genre films have come out since 2009 that look far worse than District 9 in the effects department. But still, that being said, it was definitely good enough. Definitely good enough, but not like, oh, I'm completely shocked. Because even in my humble opinion, the effects in the original Skyline far exceed expectations, considering the year of the movie and the budget. Again, Like, I'm continually blown away. And how the much more recent sequels to Skyline somehow go backwards in the effects department, which confounds me to no end. But yeah, so yeah, there's that. But also, okay, so then after I discovered that it was basically Gareth Edwards doing all the effect shots himself, and I know there's not a lot of effect shots in the total runtime of the movie, but still, I didn't know he had that degree of personal talent in animation. And that was just crazy. That was like, I was like, how? Or that's just nuts. Like, I wonder to what extent he worked on the effects, like, for his movies that came after this. Like, was it strictly like a normal director effects department situation where he just basically said, this is what I'm going for, could you do this? Or did he ever sit down and be like, no, this is how we animate this particular thing, or I literally want to, you know, did he actually do any hands-on on the animation effects for Godzilla or Rogue One or The Creator? I'm curious. I have no idea, but now I want to know.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure The Creator, he was more tied into that. The other ones, I'm not too sure, but all of his movies, especially the Hollywood produced ones, just look incredible, especially for the times that they come out. Like, The Creator is compared to so many giant budget movies. It was like, wow, like, if only we had someone like this behind those Marvel movies, because how do they have $200 million budgets?
Yeah.
And yet this.
And I don't exactly know what the budget was strictly for CGI in The Creator, and it is pretty good. But considering at least Godzilla, because Disney, I mean, Rogue One obviously has Disney people involved and financially and like number of people. So that's like not a good comparison. But at least with Godzilla and what he was able to pull off in this movie, I actually feel for The Creator being the newest, obviously. And I get it was a modest budget, but I still felt that The Creator, while it looked really good in effects, I felt like it should have just been just a little bit better because it was Edwards. I was slightly disappointed. And what I'm talking about is getting really into minutia. Like, for someone to notice what I'm talking about, you have to be kind of obsessed with 4K the way I am. Because if you're the type of person that Blu-ray is just perfectly fine for you, which definitely seems to be the majority of people by far, then you're not going to notice what I'm talking about in The Creator. It's just because I get hypercritical with that stuff.
Oh, but Isaac, how'd you feel about the effects? Did you feel like they stood out to you poorly, or were you out there?
Well, he did a good job of hiding them all. Now, for the obvious ones with all, I don't know if they were inserted, some of the military vehicles.
Yeah, I think so, yes.
I'm assuming, yeah, if those were...
They all were, yeah.
Yeah, those were not real.
I figured. Or if they were real, he used models. I have no idea. Or references. But darn, he did a good job with the references. But as for the proto-mutos, you know, I gotta say, he did a smart job. Like, he did the obvious thing of, like, okay. And he did the right thing. Again, similar, he does this in Godzilla for 2014, which we'll talk about at, you know, when we get to it. But he hides them in shadow. This time it's made sense. This made sense. He's not like, you know, trying to... Because he's focusing on the characters this time, whereas he was building anticipation for that in Fight of 2014. In this, no, it was like, okay, well, you know, I'm dirt broke. I got no money to my name in this, so I'm going to need to, you know, keep the effects very, you know, pull them back, you know, keep them reserved. He has the mystery. Sort of. We obviously see the monsters, and are the not of this earth creatures, these animals, in TV settings and in other pictures. So he does a good job of seeding them throughout the movie. And of course, in the very end, when we see the proto-mutos or octopi, we see them, and you know they look like creatures in the night. Is it compared to Cloverfield? I never saw it, so I can't, you know, comment on that.
No.
But what I can say is, like, it looked good. I enjoyed it. I understand the magician's trick, But, you know, as an audience member, I was like, you know, this is convincing. So, yeah, I'll give it a thumbs up.
One thing I have to say in reaction to what you just said, Isaac, is I know what you're saying about, you know, like hiding the monsters and saving them for later. The only problem with that as it pertained to this movie for me. So early on, I thought, oh, okay, they're doing like the Spielberg Jaws thing where you keep the monster shrouded and then eventually, you know, we get it. Or like in many classic Godzilla movies. The only problem was I kept thinking, okay, it's going to be maybe halfway or maybe the final act where it'll kick in and then we'll get the monsters in all their glory. And this movie just never does that. So that was like another thing that subverted my expectations, but that was not pleasant because I thought at some point we're going to go like down Monster Alley or something. And that time just never comes. And another movie that I'm reminded of now, we mentioned District 9. We mentioned The Creator with how they used effects. And another little movie that somehow pulled it off was Annihilation with Natalie Portman.
Yeah, great movie.
I don't know if either or both of you have seen that. But the thing is, so what was cool about Annihilation in terms of effects, they also used low budget CGI effects. It's also a small budget movie. If I put on my 4K lenses, I can see that the effects are very not 4K. But that being said, even though they're a bit cruder on the resolution side of things compared to big movies, maybe it's because the overall story and pacing of Annihilation is so much better and the intrigue and mystery that's written into it that maybe I just overall find that movie much more enjoyable, even if they are low budget effects. Like they seem to accomplish the job better because of the other elements of the movie, I think.
Yeah, and again, essentially all the movies that we've mentioned are substantially more expensive than this.
Yes.
I mean, I even looked up District 9, and it was a $30 million budget. And this was about, I think they said 500 pounds, or 500,000 pounds. So I'm not sure how much that would translate to American dollars at the time.
I read 500K US, but maybe I'm... Yeah, yeah. And then I read, so according to Wikipedia, it says 500K US. But then when I read something like on IMDb, it said much less than 500K. So I don't know what we're supposed to go with. But I will say, though, in defense, I don't know why I'm defending anyone, but with Blomkamp and District 9, yes, definitely a bigger budget. But did you ever see that short that he did prior to District 9, which was like sort of the thing that he expanded upon to make District 9. And I haven't seen it in ages, but at least from my memory, that thing was obviously micro budget, the short.
Yeah.
And I just remember looking at that going, how the heck did they pull this off? The effects. So it's certainly possible, but
yeah.
Don't ask me how that works from a production point of view.
But yeah, I definitely think it was wise to use that same technique he uses later in Godzilla 2014, of very sparingly showing a lot of them on the TV screens. We see a ton of that. And then, yeah, when we do see them, I think, again, it was just like his idea with The Creator as well, where it's like the thing that we're kind of fighting against, we discover that really they're just like everything else. They just want to, you know, just live like normal things. They're not out there being monsters. They're just going around. And it's more just the human view of them that makes them this monster. Which is a slight contradiction after the whole the town that we see just completely just destroyed in the U.S.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think it's supposed to be because the Americans keep gassing them. So they're like retaliating. But which, by the way, I did think that I remember when I first watched this, I thought I remember reading that they... shot that whole destroyed town like a war zone, but turns out it was just they came in just after a hurricane wiped out that area. So I was glad to hear that it wasn't the war zone thing, because I was like, oh, that seems a little bit, I don't know, slightly shady to some degree.
Yeah, I assumed it was post-hurricane. That's just how it looked to me. And it obviously did not look like an effect. And I didn't think they'd like built like a wrecked town and also looked too authentic. So I just assumed, it was probably a hurricane.
Yeah, and they even said they were like, we felt guilty filming right after hurricane. And, you know, we were standing on people's houses that were demolished. They're like, we felt kind of awkward, but, you know, we gave some money to the town and we donated to them to help them rebuild. But it did sound like they even felt guilty like a year later. A little bit.
Well, at least he has a conscience. That's good to know.
And it looked great. You know, you might as well use it. You have no money. Might as well use what locations you can get. And it was definitely a very memorable part of the movie. I'm trying to think. There was a couple other places I wanted to go. Oh, yeah. There was... I was going to mention this, and I'd completely forgotten this until I started doing this research. And I considered watching it, but I just didn't have any desire to. And that was a sequel to this that came out, I don't know, like 3 years or 4 years later.
Interesting. Go on.
Yeah, no, the people, like the two actors in this, I think produced it. And I think Gareth Edwards put his name on it too, but he had no involvement. And I heard nothing but terrible things. It was shot just a little bit more bigger than this. I think it had like $1 million budget. But yeah, everything I heard about it was terrible. But I just figured I should mention it because I'd completely forgotten that it existed until I started doing the research for this.
Yeah, when I read about it earlier today, I'm definitely intrigued. I'm not in any hurry.
Yeah.
But if it was like available streaming already somewhere, I'd give it a look.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, I might see it one day, maybe.
What is it, Monsters versus Aliens?
Hey, that's probably better than the sequel to this.
Do you remember the title of the sequel? Because it's almost something like that.
No, I can't remember it. Yeah, I can't remember what it was.
So, you know, Edwards does a thing of, like, you know, setting up exposition in the background with the television screens and the news reports. He also does a thing with Star Wars, hilariously, but he doesn't do it. Well, they don't let him do it in Rogue One, where he has title cards, or at least in the beginning, which give an explanation, you know, kind of like Blade Runner does. That's really cool. Gives, you know, brief explanation of what's, you know, the events. This takes place in 2011, but it happened 6 years prior, so... That's 2005. I don't know if there's any big significant events that occurred in that point. They even show the spaceship. Why am I just repeating everything that we see on screen? But they repeat. they have the actual footage of the spacecraft going into space. That was stupid. And then landing somewhere. And then I guess, you know, the none of this Earth animals show up on that ship. With, you already know this. The character of Andrew, he gets not kind of comeuppance, but obviously Sam, she points out, why are you taking photos? I like some of the lines of like, and maybe it was, you know, maybe you could say, oh, it's just like they're saying quotes rather than they're speaking naturally. I felt like maybe I'm just like, you know, not interactive with people enough, but I felt the chemistry was, or at least the interaction was natural. But when she's like, oh, you're just taking photographs of people in need or whatnot, and people who are hurt, and he's like, well, yeah, because if I take a picture of somebody who isn't, you know, hurt, well, then, you know, I don't get paid. And he's also like, doctors, which I thought that was a clever line. What else?
That's also almost like a an out of movie commentary on what you guys were just saying about, or Caleb was saying about feeling bad about shooting post hurricane. Like, that's almost like, you know, like a out of universe reference, talking about him shooting, because you could make some type of comparison to just guerrilla shooting in foreign countries and probably not even paying anyone or doing anything official. And just using what's around to make your movie.
Yeah, and it did lead to one nice little character arc there with Andrew mentions that her dad would pay, I can't remember the number he said, but a big number for a picture of a little girl who'd been killed by, or at least a child's body who'd been killed by a monster. And then when he actually has a chance to do it, he takes off his jacket and covers her up instead of taking the picture. Because he just, he doesn't have the stomach for it anymore. So I like that moment, at least. That was some little develop or arc there.
I don't know what I was thinking when that scene happened, because I didn't realize it was supposed to be a little girl. For some ridiculous reason, I thought it was the woman he spent the night with who took his stuff.
Oh, interesting.
I don't know why. And I was like, how did she get there? And like, what was she doing? Was she like following them? This is crazy. And I don't know how I dreamt up that side plot, but that's what I was convinced was happening in that scene.
You were just hoping that she'd get her comeuppance for robbing them. Yeah.
Something like that. I don't know.
Let's see. The ending is somewhat telegraphed with the Proto Mutos, with the deep, I forget what creature that is. And they're doing that little news special Andrew's watching on the television there, of like, you know, the female deep sea creature, you know, calls out basically to the male, and you know, and they, you know, have sex and then go about their ways. So it's like, okay, there's that. Obviously, I could make an obvious look, there's a wall between United States and Mexico, but I'm not going to. They make reference that the none of this earth animals are actually infecting the trees, hence why it's called the infected zone. Actually changing the terrain and the environment. Very interesting, reminded me of Nausicaa, in a way. Different, of course, but you know how there's magic. The trees are glowing now. That's pretty, with bioluminescence. That's pretty cool. What is this? James Cameron's Avatar. There's a moment when they're on the boat. That's Quentin Tarantino's favorite scene, where Andrew's sleeping and then Sam has her feet against the top of his head. That's pretty obvious there.
Oh, that's what you meant.
Yeah. I figured that's what he meant.
I was like, what? I thought that was like a real factoid.
No, it is. Like, what are you talking about? Like,
okay, sure.
It was.
He probably perked up in his seat. Yeah.
He's like, oh, look at that. He should have seen me last night when I was watching -1.
Oh no. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
What would you guys think about the choice of how they end it? Considering that we kind of see the real ending at the beginning of the movie, and at the end, before we get any action, we just kind of see them kiss, and then yeah, we know what happens after that. Did you guys like that little bit there?
If I'm going to be honest, I'd have to watch it again, because I was just like so tuned out that I saw what happened and just went, yeah, okay. But because I was so disengaged at that point, I didn't even connect like what the twist was. So I can't give an honest answer.
You mean like at the very beginning, you didn't track that it was them there?
Correct. Or yeah, or I didn't realize that when I was watching the end.
How about you, Isaac? Did you have a similar experience? Or
so once I realized, oh, this is the beginning. Okay, so like once we were at the end, sorry, and the two Proto Mutos are interacting and mating, and I'm like, okay, where's the RPG? I was literally just like waiting. Okay, where's the Americans coming in? And then it didn't happen. I was like, oh, nice. And then I realized, oh, okay, because one, there was a television when the Muto is, you know, feeling around there, and it kind of is like, ooh, attracted to electricity and, you know, the television signal. And I'm like, oh, the army's on their way. This is what happens. Yeah, I guess, yeah, it's you know, that's sad. That's kind of sad. But yeah, I kind of saw that as well. And obviously, it was, I guess, caused, you know, both characters to break the tension and just, you know, make out before, you know, their last night together, and then go their separate ways in their lives. And then, you know, the tragedy of like, oh, so yeah, these are just two animals, you know, interacting, and us stupid Americans are just, you know, you're trying to kill it.
Yeah. And it's, I did wonder if people would, because it's kind of, you don't really see them too much in that little video, but Gareth Edwards was talking about what he was hoping you would see in that scene is like, oh, you'd see that event at the beginning, you'd see her being injured, and then we see them in the hospital in the next shot, that you'd think it was like just following what just happened.
Worked on me.
Oh, okay, well, there you go.
I will say, the sequel, by the way, is Monsters Dark Continent, also known as Monsters 2 Dark Continent or Monsters 2. And I guess it's a similar, well, no, it's not similar, but similar setup as the original, except now an infected zone has appeared in the Middle East region.
Oh, okay. Well, could be interesting.
So yeah, there you go. What else was I gonna say? Oh, and just looking at like the movie poster or whatever for this movie. I hate it so much because it, first of all, doesn't look like a movie poster to me. It looks like a new series on Hulu or Amazon Prime or something. I hate the font. I hate the title, the way it appears, the movie. I also do not even like the title Monsters because that adds to it feeling like a series or something that I'm not interested in. Or if even if I think of it as a movie, it just seems like it's a movie I'm not interested in just because of the appearance of the font and title. I don't know what you should have called it instead, but like, you know, we've mentioned Cloverfield or many of those other movies, and somehow I can tell just from the poster, oh, this could be up my alley when I look at that, or look at Moon or District 9 even. Like, I can go, yeah, but this, it looks like they're advertising, when I look at the Monsters official poster, it looks like they're advertising something that has to do with creatures, but it's like based upon like a young adult novel series like Twilight or something. And it looks like we're going to follow like two young protagonists, like the protagonist in Twilight.
Yeah, I could see it being a poster, just slightly adapted to be the poster for Evolution, if you remember that movie. Like the Ghostbusters with...
Never saw it. I remember it. Never saw it, though.
Yeah.
But yeah, it looks like it's going for like a PG-13 something for high school, college age people or something. I don't know.
That's fair. But yeah, I don't feel like I have too much more for this one. I don't know if you guys are ready to move on to the final thoughts section.
I just had one more thing, and it could have been final thoughts or it could be here. But so when we were talking earlier about how a lot of the movie feels like padding, and I get what they're going for as far as the character and character development. I get that that's more of what the overall focus of the movie is, and that's totally fine. But with the padding and the scenes that just feel like they don't really add anything, I realize there's another small budget movie that has a lot of similarities to this, except that it has nothing to do with sci-fi or anything like that. But if you take that off the table, it's very similar to this movie and just done immensely better. And that's a little movie that many people haven't seen called Sin Nombre. And it's also a micro-budget film that was filmed throughout Central America. And again, it's not genre or anything. It's supposed to be like a realistic drama, fictional drama, where there's this kid who's caught up in the cartels in South Central America. And I can't remember the reasons, but he has to escort, I don't know if she's his sister or who she is to him, but he has to escort this girl who's like 14 or 15 in the movie, and they have to make their way across Mexico with no money or anything, to the goal being just to get across the border to the US. And the whole movie's like this, micro budget, filmed on location, a bunch of people who are not actors, or at least not seasoned actors. And the whole thing is the same idea of these two characters kind of bonding along the journey. And it's just done so much better. And even though it's just people talking and going from here to here, you really feel like things are happening. You really feel like emotions are developing. It's not boring. It's really well done. So I almost feel like Sin Nombre, which I think came out a little bit before this.
Yep.
Is just, it's really good. And I just recommend it to people in general. If you just like nice small scale dramas, foreign like film, I guess, because everyone speaks Spanish. But it's just really well done. And that actress would definitely, like, that would start her career. I can't remember her first name, but her last name is Gaetan. And she was nobody when that movie came out. But later, she had like a significant role, like in the Narcos series and a lot of other Spanish language things. And so she's fairly known now. But this was like her big start when she was a young nobody. But it's just, I think this movie was going for a lot of things that that movie pulled off way better. So, yeah, take that for what it is. Highly recommend seeing Nombre.
Yeah.
Which means without name in English.
Yeah, I've been wanting to see that for ever since whenever that show Maniac, when that came out. Because it was directed by the same guy who directed that and No Time to Die. Carrie Joji Fukunaga.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That guy has some interesting work.
Yeah, that was his debut film, so I've been meaning to catch it.
Oh, wow, I forgot it was him. Because, yeah, he really goes on to make some good things after that.
Yeah.
And, you know, you guys know, but, you know, I used to work with immigrants a lot. And it was kind of like my wish that during training for people who work with immigrants who don't really know anything about, like, where these people are coming from and what they've gone through, like, to get to the border. I always felt like Sin Nombre, even though it's fictional, I mean, it's based on things that do happen in the real world to this day. And I always felt like I wish we could just like show this movie to people who are getting into this type of field, because it's one of the easiest ways you could really, really have an idea, because you can have people tell you, oh, this is what happened to me and this is what I had to deal with getting here. But you can't really imagine it until you see something like that movie. So even for people who are just curious, I would just encourage you to seek that out. And it'll probably give you some new thoughts that you haven't had before when considering like an immigrant journey in modern times.
Hey, I love it. Thank you very much for the recommendation. There you go.
Absolutely. It's always bothered me that you can't really get it on physical media anywhere in North America, but you can find it streaming, certainly.
Oh, but I guess, yeah, let's... Isaac, do you have anything else, or should we move on to the final summations?
How the hey did Andrew's camera not run out of batteries?
Yeah, or get smashed at a certain point. I was wondering, too.
There is that, too. These two characters feel like they're out of Far Cry 3. I can totally see that. And this whole thing also reminded me of Far Cry 3.
Oh, interesting.
It's around that time era. And with Sam, there was... I should have mentioned this when we were talking about the characters. There's always seemed... The way that her performance came across for me is that she was hiding something. What was the reason she was in Mexico? Obviously, I guess the answer is she was running from her control freak of a dad. Or just didn't agree with his morals or standards or whatever. Maybe she also was running away from her fiance. But there's also something where I was like, maybe my stupid sci-fi and or, like meta brain is like, oh, is she hiding something? Is she wanting to help these animals? Like, is what's going on? The proto-mutos? Is there something? Is she like an activist for that? No. Maybe I was just reading a little too much into it, but that was my, crackpot, tinfoil hat theory of like, oh, that's why she's kind of like distant or whatever you want to call it. Anyways, now to final thoughts for as of this moment. Eric, what are your final thoughts for this viewing of Monsters by Gareth Edwards?
I just wanted it to be more overall, so it came off as underwhelming on first watch. However, someday, it probably could be a long time from now, I may be just in the mood to pop it on, because there are other movies, like Linklater movies and by other filmmakers, like Lost in Translation. If I had seen Lost in Translation on my first time on the wrong day in the wrong mood, I probably would have been like other haters out there that just say, I don't get it. What's the point? Nothing happens. But I happened to watch Lost in Translation at the right time to where it really resonated with me. And so I think that may have been a big factor of me not being in the proper headspace. And it also had to do with my expectations, putting me in the wrong headspace. But I think if I was in the right headspace, I could probably watch this again and like a lot more about it, I suspect. So, yeah.
Yeah, there's an element of it feeling like Quentin Tarantino would talk about with Jackie Brown, where he was just trying to create a hangout movie, a movie that you could just pop in every now and again and just enjoy being along for the ride. And you don't have to fully, it's not something that's super serious you have to fully engage with. Personally, I don't really think he accomplished that with Jackie Brown. That feels a little bit more like Death Proof to me.
Oh, dear.
as much as I enjoy Death Proof. But I feel that hangout movie vibe with this. I can just enjoy traveling along, seeing all these different regions, and yeah, so some great photography throughout. But yeah, overall, it just, you can definitely feel the improvisational kind of aspect of it. And you maybe have to be in the right mood for that. Overall, it's never going to be a strong movie, but at times it can be a fun one. But that's all I got. How about you, Isaac?
Thank you, sir. Like I said before, I'm feeling this movie, and that improvisational acting, the down-to-earth boots on the ground, street level, whatever you want to call it, actually, like, non-script, I'm not going to say it's real, like, oh, it's real, but there's passion, there's authenticity to this. I enjoy that stuff. You know, he went in there, Edwards had some apprehensions when it came to filming as well. He's like, I don't know if I should be doing this or whatnot. He actually had morals to him. He has standards. I enjoy that about this film. I think it's authentic and whatnot. It's not going to win any award. Well, I think it may have won an award too, but like, you know what? Like, it's not the best movie ever made.
Small awards.
Small awards, of course. But like, and there's obviously other films that are better than this, but I in this day and age, where you see everything made by committee, it's nice to at least see a man get his passion out there and, you know, bring in actors who, again, maybe they're not the most experienced or veteran. You know what? I enjoy that. That's why films exist. They exist in all different platforms and on all different levels. And I was definitely, I definitely enjoyed this experience, and will watch this one again sometime later down the line. So thank you, gentlemen, for talking about this film. And now that...
If I may...
Go ahead.
Before you close it out.
Of course.
Just based on some of the things you just said about authenticity of the film and what you gravitated towards, I'd almost suggest you give Slacker a go. I feel like you might either love it or just hate it or think nothing about it. But it's just... I was just really thinking of that movie as I was listening to you talk about what you liked about this one. Even though it's something completely different.
That is true. I mean, I did enjoy what is that one? Scanner Darkly and Apollo 13 and a half, or you know, whatever.
Oh, Link, yeah, I forgot about that
Ladder's film from 2 years ago was. Whatever that one was. I enjoyed both of them.
I'm not saying you'll like it as much as those, but it'll still definitely start filling the backstory of who this guy was when he first started making movies. And then I also wanted to mention, I just saw it, the last thing the Wikipedia entry says on this movie is that in January 2018, Channel 4, I'm assuming they mean Channel 4 in the UK, was developing a TV series based on this movie, but it was unknown if Gareth Edwards or anyone else from the previous films would have any involvement. But obviously we haven't heard anything since then, but it was a thing, supposedly.
Citation?
Oh, no.
Citation. Okay.
Sorry, it's Wikipedia. I have to be a little bit apprehensive.
That came from something written by Peter White, Gareth Edwards, sci-fi feature monsters being... That was the name of the article.
Yeah, of course.
From Deadline.
Okay.
All right.
2018.
There you go. Okay.
Okay, well, thank you guys for joining me for this. Yeah, continuing the Gareth Edwards retrospective, I'm happy to round it out hopefully soon with covering Godzilla 2014. I definitely have a lot of thoughts on that. I know that you guys have a lot of thoughts, so I'm definitely looking forward to that conversation. But until that time, Isaac, do you have any final words for us?
As I said beforehand, on to Godzilla 2014. Peace out. Thank you. Gentlemen, we're here to discuss Godzilla Minus One. So, Caleb, what your initial thoughts? What are your thoughts on Godzilla Minus One?
No, we're here to talk about monsters. What's this?
Well, because I saw it last night.
So are we doing this or are we not doing this? Now I'm confused.
We're doing monsters, but this is what I was telling Caleb today, where it's just like, oh, we gotta talk about something else. It's topical.
Yeah, and he keeps trying to, he's been for weeks now trying to push off of our New Year's special. Maybe we just won't do it this year. Yeah, I guess we'll do this instead.
Of course not. This is not the case, obviously. It's just like, because Eric, I saw Minus One last night, so I'm like, mm-hmm. Okay, well, this is in the zeitgeist. This is on Caleb's mind. So yes. We probably should at least, you know, quickly discuss it before, unless you want to do monsters first.
We just discussed it before you got on, but we can do it again.
Dang. Like, recorded it? Oh, nice. Okay.
Well, no, not recorded.
Oh, no, fair enough. Okay. Let's start over. Caleb, you want to start it?
Take it away.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Between Unaffiliated. Today, kind of on the Monster Mash series. It's both part of it, I suppose. Well, is it part of it, Caleb? I don't know. We're going to talk about, well, we're going to do a commentary of monsters.
Oh, we're doing a commentary?
No, we're not. We're not doing a commentary.
Oh, we're not? Oh. Oh. Yeah, start this again. Okay.
I was actually okay with that. I just didn't expect it.
Okay, what are we doing with monsters? Are we talking about
what is happening right now?
Yes, discussion of monsters, yes.
Okay, hang on. All right, I gotta start this again.
I thought we were talking about Minus One. I was.
Yeah, I know, the script keeps flipping. I can't keep up. I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
I'm trying to flip the script. No, okay, we're gonna do the discussion first. Why not? Let's do the freaking what we came here to do.
Holy smokes.
And then we'll go to the script. Okay.
I know he's gonna start off with Star Wars 77. Okay, let's go.
So welcome to, what is it? What was that next film he made? Clockwork Orange. There we go.
Oh boy.
Oh gosh. Okay. I guess I will start this then.
Roll it. Yeah. Okay.